will register when it is assimilated. And we, at best, work hard to assimilate it. And it does not mean that the work I do will be assimilated, at least not in my lifetime. So, so for me, it's a conversation with human language. And look, I want to tell you this story. In the Modern Language Association, I was invited to be on a panel to speak about the embargo, continued embargo on Palestinian literature. The Modern Language Association, this was a few years ago, was trying to rally its members to vote for the BDS, the boycott, divestment and sanctions against Israel. And so I was speaking with others, and a person in the audience at the end asked me this question. And this is a professor, and I understood later that he was asking the question because, a professor of literature, because he wanted to make sure that nobody misunderstood anything and that I am, a safe dog to pet. The question was, do you believe that Hebrew is capable of love the same way as Arabic? And my answer, who isn't capable of, like, what are you talking, like, which language would know more or less about love than another language? So you're asking me in this society to have an open conversation about what it means to be a beautiful Arab writing in English? I don't think so. But I will be beautiful and I'll continue to write.
What you just heard were readings of Fadi Judah's Tethered to Stars poems and Hayan Sharara's These Trees, Those Leaves, This Flower, That Fruit poems, followed by questions and answers. That event took place on September 8, 2022 at the annual Arab American Educational Foundation Dr. Burhan and Mrs. Misako Ajouz Professor of Arab Studies Distinguished Lecture in Literature titled Contemporary Poetry, the Arab American Turn. The event was organized by the Arab American Educational Foundation Center for Arab Studies at the University of Houston. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
KBOO, Portland.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dot.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right ready.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly, what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals with your host, Courtney Scott. Today, we are delighted to welcome Elephant Aid International founder, president, and CEO, Carol Buckley. Carol is an internationally recognized authority in the rescue, rehabilitation, and welfare of captive-held elephants. She has been working with captive elephants in Asia for many years and is also now developing a new sanctuary for captive elephants in the United States. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you very much.
So just let's get started and talk about how this all came about, a little bit about your history. You started out kind of in a diametrically different career path. You were an elephant trainer for a circus. Is that correct?
Well, actually, you are correct that it was a different path. I was actually a student studying exotic animal care and training, and it was at that point that I met the elephant that changed my life. And yes, I was in the field of entertainment with her.
So she was learning tricks and so forth?
Yes, she was.
So that was quite a change then, because then you became someone who rescued elephants. So did you have some kind of an aha moment? For instance, I don't know if you knew who Mel Richardson was, but he said in a video that he had one of those moments when he saw an elephant actually cry, and that changed his whole career path for him. So did you have some kind of moment like that with Tara?
No, actually, I didn't have a moment. What I had was a journey.
Okay.
And Tara and I were on the journey together. And it was because of Tara that I learned everything that I did learn and continued to learn about elephants. And it was because of our relationship, she was able to teach me that, you know, what we believed or what was the norm for elephants in captivity did not have to be that way. So it was not, you know, one simple, singular moment. It was every day with her and experiencing life through her experience that educated me and brought me to the understanding that we don't have to do it the way they say you have to do it, and that is not the only way to do it, that we can actually create our own way.
Exactly. So, in other words, it was kind of like a series of moments, you could say, of different experiences accumulated.
Absolutely. And really, when I met Tara, she was less than 1 year old, so she was a baby. And, of course, she physically, mentally, and emotionally grew somewhat at the same rate as a human child would. So it was, you know, day by day, each new day, of learning something new from her and about her. And so, one day I would have this incredible insight in how intelligent they are. And then 2 days later, she would do something that showed me, my goodness, how dependent they are on others. And then the next day, she would show me something that demonstrated how physically capable she is. And actually, when she was around 6 years old, she demonstrated that even without the example of her family, of her elephant family, she could reach into her cell memory and come up with a solution of a problem that she was having. And it was something that I never taught her, that she never would have seen any other elephant do, and somehow she figured it out as a child elephant.
Amazing.
She figured it out. So it was these type of things that really made me understand, you know, what I was dealing with, who I was dealing with, and gave me the somewhat the courage to you know, go out on her own and try a new way.
So what did working so closely with Tara and elephants and that's starting with the circus, teach you about them? What is the most important or interesting trait about them?
Well, there isn't just one that is most interesting.
Okay.
But something that really stands out is how compassionate they are in all situations, and especially when you consider the suffering that they go through on a daily, moment-by-moment basis. They are experiencing that pain and frustration. They are experiencing the loneliness and being misunderstood and the physical abuse, and even during all of that, they will show compassion and act and live in a most compassionate compassionate manner that, you know, what that taught me is they are so much more evolved than we are.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have kind of a reverence for elephants, and that might be one of the key reasons that I've, you know, that I have heard about, and they've seen videos on, you know, online about them rescuing others, even other species.
Yes.
So that's,
you know, a lot of people who care deeply about elephants actually will feel sorry for elephants and see them as a victim. And one of the things that I really feel like I've gotten from the opportunity to be around elephants and to be of service to elephants is they do not see themselves as victims. And I think that's because they are highly evolved, they are self-aware, they are aware of everything that's going on around them, and it is below them for them to see themselves in a victim role, which is one of the reasons why they will work really hard or try really hard to make any situation work, instead of just rebelling and being aggressive and killing someone that is abusing them or neglecting them. They really will try to make it work, and that's not because they're a victim, and it's also not because they've given up and they're fearful. It's because they're much more evolved.
Oh, that's very interesting. But of course, yeah, I'm sure you know the story of Tyke.
Of course.
So,
you know, Tyke is the, Tara is the inspiration for the elephant sanctuary that I created 22 years ago. But Tyke was the reason that I did it when I did it.
Ah. So that would have been in the 90s, right?
95.
Yeah, 95. Yeah, so I'm sure you know about I'll just to clue people in who don't know, Tyke is a circus elephant who escaped the circus, killed her trainer, and ran into the streets of Honolulu and was shot down. And so I think her story did wake up a lot of people about the suffering of elephants in circuses.
I believe it did too. And Tyke was, you know, one of those individuals that she was just used and used up, and partially because she was so talented, so sharp. I mean, they're all smart. They're incredibly intelligent and wise. But they used her as a baby to do all these tricks, and she rode a tricycle. And she, when she was growing up, there was no recognition of her, you know, evolving into an adult elephant. They still wanted to treat her like a little kid. She was truly misunderstood, and she did rebel. But when she ran away, it was the same situation that she had done about a year before, is she had just lost her temper with the groom, not the trainer.
Uh-huh.
It's the groom. And the groom is the backup person, the person who cleans around the elephant, moves the manure, gets the elephant ready for the show, and is somewhat picking on the elephant all the time. And so she went after the groom, is who she went after.
Mm.
And the only reason that the trainer got killed is because the trainer went in and was trying to coax her. He didn't even have his hook. He was using his hands, and he was pulling her, going, come on, get away from him. And she was so enraged and so angry. You know, at that point, any animal, including human animal, are not thinking when they're that enraged. There's no brain power anymore. And so she wasn't thinking. She reacted, and she actually pushed him away twice. If you look at the video, she pushed him away twice.
Huh.
He came back a third time, and she just lost it.
Right. He could have saved himself, in other words.
Of course he could have.
Yeah.
He could have. And the way he approached her, in my opinion and in my experience, was he was demonstrating that he did have a relationship with her. And he did believe he could pull her off of the groom. But she was actually at that point, you just see she was
right.
Too far gone.
Yeah, gotcha. You know, this just reminds me of an animal, I guess a horse whisperer you would call him, who said that a horse told him that the horse feels he's superior to humans.
Well, and they are.
So I think the elephants are very similar to that.
Oh, yes. And the thing is, elephants know it. I think they almost feel bad for us. You know, I know with Tara, she would be so patient in situations as she got a little older, you know, and she was in her 20s, and I'd do something human and stupid, you know, and I just see the look on her face. It's like, oh, well, you know, these people.
That was a good mirror for you, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit, because I know you're working in Asia with the Asian tourist trade and trying to get elephants off of chains there. So those are also captive elephants as well. So what is your, from your experience, are there any differences in behavior between these captive elephants, whether they're in the circus, the zoo, or in the Asia tourist trade, from wild elephants?
Oh, there's a...
Because, you know, the zoo is always saying that they're just the same. They're always telling us that, so...
Well, they're elephants, okay? So captive held elephants or wild elephants, they're still the same animal, okay? So they are... And, in fact, all of the elephants that you see in captivity anywhere around the world are wild animals. There is no such thing as a domesticated elephant, because that's a scientific process where you choose individual elephants, you select them for special traits, and you breed them together. That has never been done with elephants. So they are a wild animal living in captivity. And what I see, what I observe of the elephants in Asia, be it Thailand, India, Nepal, Sumatra, Cambodia, Vietnam, wherever they are, those elephants living in captivity are a mirror image of their cousins that are living in Europe and America in zoos and circuses, and the management is almost identical. I don't know. I mean, there hasn't been too much of an evolution in the Western world for elephant care. A little bit in training, but not so much in management and care. But the reality is that the captive held elephant is a shell of his self, just a shell, because the physical abuse, physical abuse or psychological abuse, or everything that is done to elephants to get them to bring them into compliance on a on demand, takes a real breaking of the spirit, and then the continual dominance. Everything about their life is dominated. Where they go, when they go there, where they stand, who they stand with, what they eat, when they sleep. All of that is dominated on a minute to day, you know, to lifetime basis. And what that does in a highly developed and intelligent mind, it creates a syndrome called learned helplessness. And this is a condition. And the condition is as a result of continual long-term abuse and by a caregiver who provides what the animal needs to survive. So it's like a jailer. It's like someone, you know, the people who are taking care of someone in a prison. And it's like a trainer who dominates everything the elephant does and when they do it. So these captive held elephants develop learned helplessness, and they then become helpless. And that is so contrary to who they are as a being, who they are. And so they just become empty inside. And a lot of people will say, look at that elephant. You know, she just looks kind of like a ghost. There's no life. You look in her eyes and she's not there. And that's because she's not there. Mm-hmm. And the way for her to survive is for her to actually just leave. So there is no brain function going on. She's vacant. It's gone. And you'll see elephants in captivity doing this number of repetitive behaviors, such as swaying or bobbing or doing a repetitive movement, the same movement over and over and over again. And this is stereotypic behavior. It is captivity-induced. You do not see it in the wild. And what it is actually for elephants is a coping mechanism. It keeps them from going out of their mind, losing their mind. So they do this repetitive movement. That repetitive movement, much like within a jogger or somebody, an athlete that's doing the same thing over and over again, it creates endorphins. And, of course, the endorphins make the elephant feel good, so now they're self-drugging. So they're drugging themselves into this euphoria. Their brain is not functioning. They are vacant. That's it. They're gone.
Yeah, it's kind of like ghost, I think, is a good appropriate word. So you would agree, for instance, with Dame Daphne Sheldrick, who said, what you're seeing in a zoo is not an elephant, but a tragedy.
And that's so elegantly put, because it's true, the body is there, But the elephant is gone. The essence of elephant is it's gone. And until we put it, we can take an elephant from a captive situation, and we can introduce them into an environment that meets their needs physically, psychologically, and emotionally, and that elephant will return.
The spirit will return.
Absolutely.
Okay.
She's there. She will come back. She will heal. They are survivors. And so if you give them the tools by which to survive, to recover, they will. You know, at the sanctuary, the first sanctuary that I built in Tennessee, we rescued 24 elephants, and this was the beginning of Elephant Sanctuary. There wasn't one before us. And so we got the elephants from the very worst situations, you know, that had been living alone for 40 years, that had killed people. And, I mean, just really awful. And the zoos and circuses laughed and said, oh, boy, you're just getting our trash, is what they would say. And I'd say, you give me your trash. I want your trash because I'm going to show you, you know, these elephants, they just need to be treated with respect and have their needs met, and they will recover. And they all did, every single one of them.
Wow. Well, we're just going to let people know that we're in the middle of an interview with Carol Buckley, who is the founder, president, and CEO of Elephant Aid International. So, Carol, we just want to keep on with that and talk about a little bit about your experience in Asia working with the mahouts. And I just was wondering, are there any female mahouts?
That's a good question, and traditionally, no.
Uh-huh.
But in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, we are seeing a shift in that. At least we're seeing the shift in Nepal, where I spend most of my time when I'm in Asia. I work with the Nepal government. They have about 100, 150 elephants now, and then there are another close to 100 privately owned elephants that are used in the tourist trade. So I work with them, and I work with mahouts, and there are now 2 female mahouts that are working for the government.
Hmm.
And it's kind of sad, because here are these sweet, soft, by culture, women, and very soft-spoken and very gentle, and I'll be speaking with them, you know, prior to them getting their elephant ready to go out and do their anti-poaching patrol, which is the job of the mahouts and the government elephants. And here will be this very soft-spoken, sweet woman, and the moment that she walks up to her elephant, her voice changes, it drops octaves, she yells, she gets very assertive and aggressive, and it's just really rough on the elephant. And I'm like, oh, it doesn't have to be that way. So that's one of the things I'm teaching them, is that if you develop a relationship with your elephant, you actually can enjoy your job, and so will your elephant. So I've been there about 7 years now, and it really, there's a shift. There's a huge shift. There are a bunch of young male mahouts who are very interested in a new way of doing things. You know, they're young, they're flexible, they're willing to consider other ways. And so, if we can get them young like that with a young elephant, it makes all the difference. Because a mature elephant, say, you know, any age over 20, you have to consider that for 20 years she's just been used and abused, and she or he is not interested in cooperating anymore. But if you get a young baby and you get a young mahout at the same time, and I can get my hands on both of them, then I can help the young mahout actually to make a heart-to-heart connection with the elephant, and the elephant is ready for it no matter. So if I can show this mahout, you know, this is okay, and it's actually really good. So I teach them how to do that. And once they make that heart-to-heart connection with the elephant, then everything falls into place. They become overprotective for the elephant. They make sure that the elephant gets his or her needs met, and they're proud of the elephant. So it's just shifting culture a little bit. And the other thing we're doing there is all elephants in Asia, to contain them, they keep them on chains. And in Nepal and India as well, they'll take chains and they'll put them around the front ankles and then chain the ankle braces together so that their front legs are chained together, and then they peg that to the ground.
Mm.
And they see, they they see no problem with that. And if you're there and you understand the culture, you go, well, of course, because everything is tied up. Every animal has a purpose. It has a use to benefit humans, and they're all tied up. They don't put them in pens so they can walk around or anything. They don't even think about that. So I came in and I said, okay, the first thing that I can do to help these elephants is I can get them off those chains. And it took me 3 years to convince the government to let me do a pilot project. And so we did the pilot project, 1 acre, solar-powered, chain-free corral. And it was in a forested area, so it was, you know, nice 1 acre with trees and vegetation and all that. And we released a young 10-year-old female in there that had been very neurotic, and her stereotypic behavior was getting actually destructive to herself. And so that was the pilot project. It was incredibly successful. The government approached me immediately and said, let's do all of our elephants. So in the last 3 years, between the elephants in Nepal and elephants in Thailand that we've created these same chain-free corrals for, we've released 106 elephants from their chain.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It is, and that's the elephants, wonderful. I will tell you, even the slightest improvement in life means so much to them.
Just being off those chains, my goodness.
They run and they play and they scratch on trees and they trumpet, and it's really amazing to watch.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's good information about your experience in Asia. It sounds very positive. Now, let's just segue over to your new sanctuary. It's going to be in Georgia, correct?
It is in Georgia. It's in Decatur County. It's at Apolgus, Georgia, population 450.
Wow.
Yeah, it is 850 acres of elephant heaven. It is, we looked for 2.5 years to find this particular piece of land that, you know, met all the needs, and the list was quite long, and it is phenomenal. So it has very mild weather, specifically mild winter weather,
mm-hmm.
which means elephants will be outside all the time. The land is quite remote, very private. It has 10 spring heads on the property that feed into these sand bottom small creeks that are year-round running spring water, and two big lakes. There is, of course, a lot of forested area, a lot of pasture area. It's just an amazing piece.
That sounds wonderful. So do you have elephants lined up to go to this sanctuary?
No, the nature of rescue is that you build it and then they will come.
Okay. So in other words, are you hoping to get them from like zoos and circuses, or do you have other places that you're thinking about?
Well, no, we'll be bringing elephants in only from North America.
Okay.
And that will be zoos and circuses.
Okay. So we need to get those zoos to let more of them out.
Yeah. Well, you know, things are changing rapidly.
Are they?
In the 20 years that since I started the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee, we have seen an incredible shift. The AZA, which is the Association of Zoos, had requirements that zoos could keep one elephant in a very small space, and they could be chained and could be all concrete. And then after about a decade of us rescuing elephants, we noticed that things were changing, and all of a sudden AZA then said, okay, our member institutions have to have two elephants, you know. And so here it is 2 decades later, and now they've mandated 3 elephants and bigger space, and so things are improving. Now, I think what zoos will learn is that they don't have the space elephants need. And so once that is recognized and accepted, then I think more zoos will then go ahead and send their elephants to places that can give the elephants the space, and it's not so much the care. I mean, I don't have a criticism to the care that zoos give. Within their framework, they do a great job. But where the issue is the space that elephants need to be an elephant. And so without that space, you can have the best veterinarians, you can have the best keepers. It doesn't make a difference if you don't have the space. You can't get them off of concrete, and you've got them in a cold climate.
Right, which is the case here in Portland.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit about this legal battle over Tara. What is the story there, and what would you say to those who criticize you for taking her from what they call her family?
Well, you know, I would say that people don't know the story. They don't know what's going on with Tara, and I'm not in a position at this point to give out that information because there's a lawsuit ongoing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I can say that the only reason I would ever move Tara from any situation is if she was not thriving. So that in itself, you know, should be the red flag that she's not thriving. Now, that's not saying that where she is not a good place. That is not the case. The case is that this particular elephant, in the situation she is currently in, is not doing well emotionally and therefore physically. So it is my responsibility, it's everybody's responsibility, to look at each individual elephant and say, is she thriving there? Is this what she needs? And if it's not what she needs, then she should be moved to the place that can give her what she needs.
Okay, so we'll soon see the outcome of that since, as you say, it's a lawsuit. So just to wrap up, I'm just going to mention that, you know, we do have some progress with Ringling retiring its elephants and SeaWorld stopping breeding orcas. So you mentioned you see more hope with zoos. Do you see any other hope for people to take home today about elephants in captivity?
Well, the situation with zoos is changing. I think circuses is a story we already know now, with Ringling closing down. The other circuses will follow. There are still a few elephants that are in the circus, but I think they'll probably all be moved now. They may be moved into zoos, and then we have to deal with that. But really, this is moving forward. There are many groups that are doing good work in educating the public and in helping these captive elephants in America. There's a whole different situation in Asia. And we have people from all over the Western world going to Asia to ride elephants and to play with elephants and to bathe elephants. And those elephants live